It's time for our series this week that asks a simple three-word question. Did it work? In this series, we're looking back at past initiatives that used taxpayer or ratepayer dollars, and we're following up to see what happened. Today, an expansive, long-term plan to bolster Vermont's local food economy. And here to tell us about it is VPR reporter Emily Corwin. Hey, Emily.
Hi, Henry.
So can you tell us, what was this initiative?
It's called the Farm-to-Plate Strategic Plan. It's a law that passed in 2009 when dairy farms across the state were shuttering and struggling, as they still are. And lawmakers like Senator Chris Bray wanted to find a way for Vermont to be more proactive about the farm economy. And they spearheaded the Farm to Plate legislation.
So it's Jake Claro.
Claro.
Yeah.
I met up with Jake Claro. He's this very earnest fellow who is the director of the Farm to Plate project at the Sustainable Jobs Fund.
Farm to Plate is very simply Vermont's food system plan.
And the law that was ultimately passed in 2009, it had three goals.
Increasing economic development in the food system, which includes increasing jobs and establishments.
And improve access to local healthy food for Vermonters.
Okay, so some big goals. How were they going to measure whether they met those goals?
So there are a whole lot of metrics they're following, but the number one essential goal here is to figure out, you know, what share of the food that's purchased in Vermont is sourced locally and produced locally, and to grow that share. And so in 2010, that was 5%, and the goal was by 2020 to make it 10%, to double it. And each year, the Agency of Ag has put $100,000 toward that effort.
Okay. And you actually first reported about this program when you were at New Hampshire Public Radio back in 2013. Is that right?
You're totally right about that. It is so weird to listen back to my reporting from then. I was such a baby reporter. But I remember at the time, you know, New Hampshire was proposing this similar farm-to-plate bill, only they had no money for it. They were not going to appropriate money.
Okay.
And that same year, Vermont lawmakers were starting to appropriate a whole lot of money in these direct grants for farmers and also loggers. It was sort of an outgrowth. And they appropriated, you know, over the last 6 years, they've appropriated $9 million. For grant making for local food and logging businesses. And so I just remember from my perch in New Hampshire, just thinking like what was happening in Vermont was just unfathomable.
Okay. So there has been all this money towards expanding the local food economy. So here's the question. Did it work?
Yeah. You know, I think largely it's pretty easy to say, yes, it worked. Remembering that initial goal was to double the share of local food being consumed in Vermont by 2020, they've pretty much tripled the share of local food that's being consumed here.
Really, the food system as an economic driver has been borne out much more than I think people thought or expected.
Jobs have also done pretty well. The local food manufacturing has increased by 72% over the last 8 years. That's pretty good. There are also metrics that they've, you know, failed to meet. You know, the dairy industry, which was sort of the instigation for this whole thing, he says it's been very hard to influence the dairy market. And you know, getting people, low-income people, access to local food has also been a struggle, as has even, you know, being able to analyze, getting data that can help the state even assess that has been difficult.
Mm-hmm. So the project was largely successful. In revisiting it now, were you able to ascertain how it worked?
So, you know, I remember in 2013 working on that story, and I went to Montpelier to talk to people at the Agency of Ag, and I think they gave me a printout.
So here's kind of the latest version.
This, like, so constellation like, that just was, you know, laughably bureaucratic.
Something like that.
In the center is our steering committee, which is made up of those
and then
chairs. Sort of the next layer is the working groups, which are kind of those high leverage points in the circles system. That come off of those working groups, which are the task forces. So those are.
And I was just like, you know, you got to be kidding me. You know, how are you going to corral these thousands of people in all of their various overlapping working groups to achieve a single goal? And I got to say, you know, a lot of people are telling me today, like, this was successful.
Hello, this is Sean.
Hey, Sean, can you hear me okay?
Hello?
I talked to Sean Buchanan. Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Sorry, that was my
fault. He was at that time a business development manager at Black River Produce in Springfield. He was on the meat processing task force, though he moved to Rhode Island recently.
So you just pick up the phone and call for 2 hours and talk to somebody about where they thought things would shift and where the infrastructure needed to happen. And there were just these really, I guess it was like being like at college where you're just sitting around and you're like, you know what makes a great jazz album? This makes a great jazz album. That's what we were doing with meat processing. We were just trying to figure out like this idealistic solution that would allow producers to scale.
You know, basically his task force was trying to solve like this one problem, which is that in Vermont, they didn't have a way to slaughter and process on a large enough scale that they could serve, you know, UVM.
We just couldn't get to a scale where you could sit down with a Hannaford's and say, we have this product. It's great. We can do it week in and week out. This is the shelf life that you're going to get out of it. So we felt as a group that we needed slaughter and processing capability.
Ultimately, you know, this process helped Black River Produce create Vermont Packing House, which is now owned by a separate entity. And today it's got, you know, 70 employees and distributes meat all over the state, even down in Rhode Island where Sean Buchanan lives.
It's getting delivered to my neighbor's house.
You know, it might be worth noting that while a lot of Vermonters are really proud of this facility, it has had a couple run-ins with federal regulators.
So who else did you talk to? I know your first story in 2013 for NHPR, that featured a farmer with a CSA, and his name was Joe Bewley, right?
Right, Joe Bewley. And I met him back in 2013 on his farm, Screaming Ridge Farm in Montpelier. He had a 250-person CSA. And when I caught up back with him this summer, he had me meet him at his facility of his, you know, now full-time soup-making business in downtown Montpelier.
We have 3 steam kettles. I've got 4 employees right now. We'll have 6 come September.
So, you know, he doesn't have his CSA anymore. He grows produce for his soups, he sources almost everything locally, and then he sells these packaged soups all over the state.
Okay, so Joe Bewley's business has really evolved over these last 6 years. How does he see the farm-to-plate plan as affecting his business?
So first of all, there's money. Joe Bewley got 2 matching grants. The most recent one is $50,000 from the state, and that helped him move into his current facility.
The return on that investment is easily tenfold. The taxes I pay, the rent I pay, the infrastructure.
But there's something even more interesting, which Bewley mentioned to me. Remember that like insane constellation of working groups and task forces?
Yep.
He tells me it actually functioned like this enormous PR campaign. Everyone seems more willing to pay more money for local food.
Okay, so it's all very positive. So is that it? It was mostly a success, though, as you said earlier, not entirely. And now come next year, 2020, it's all done?
No, actually, I hear that they are renewing the money and the plan, and they will go ahead and put together a new 10-year plan for 2030.
Okay, well, we'll have to chat again in 2030, Emily.
I'll be here.